Welcome to this webinar from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer, and I'm chair and co-founder of the Business Marketing Club. The BMC is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, podcasts, training, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. And today we have over 1,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. This is the 13th week that we've been running these webinars on how business marketers are responding to the COVID-19 crisis, and we're 15 weeks into the UK lockdown. The macro trend impact so far has been huge. The US Congressional Budget Office has warned that the coronavirus could be a drag on the US economy for a decade. UK debt is now larger than the size of the whole economy. Official figures show that the Australian economy is set for its first recession in three decades. Elsewhere, there are signs that the Western world is relaxing lockdown. England has announced that pubs, restaurants, and hairdressers can reopen from the 4th of July. The US president has held his first election campaign rally since March. But there's been a spike in cases in North Rhine-Westphalia that's led to reimposed lockdowns in two state districts of Germany. So how are our four speakers seeing the impact of the crisis on them, their business, their projects, their working practices, jobs, marketing messages, marketing channels, and their profession? We'll hear shortly. As you listen, type a comment or question into the questions box, starting your point with the first name of the speaker that you'd like to be able to address it, and I'll put your questions and comments to the speakers after we've heard from each. If you represent a business that has a B2B marketing project or role that you'd like to ask for help in filling from the community on this call, drop some details in the questions box as well, and I'll mention it at the end of this webinar. I've already received details of one such project on this call today, and I'll be flagging that to attendees towards the end of this. Please also flag in the questions box if you'd like to be a speaker at a future COVID webinar, write about this one, or find out more about the BMC, and I'll be in touch. You can tweet along to today's webinar using the hashtag B2B Lockdown. That's B2B Lockdown. Our first speaker today is Adele Walsh, the commercial marketing manager at McAfee. Adele has been working in both large multinational and startup B2B environments with a strong focus on tech for the last 20 years. As marketing manager for McAfee, Adele manages the marketing campaigns and programs for the commercial team based in Cork in Ireland. Adele, thank you for coming on the webinar, and over to you.
Thanks a million, Dave. Great to be part of this very exciting panel and a really interesting topic. Hopefully you'll learn a few bits from what I have here today. So I suppose at the start of the year, none of us would have kind of predicted that we'd be battling through a pandemic or that we would have envisaged how long lockdown would have been imposed for. I know when I left the office on the 13th of March, the VP of sales turned around and said, I'll probably see you after Easter. But Easter has been and gone, and we're firmly here working from home for the foreseeable. So I suppose as a marketeer, I'm very kind of adept to change. But marketing in a pandemic has definitely been challenging. I suppose all face-to-face events have been cancelled. Direct mail has been put on hold, just to kind of name but a few. One of the things I suppose that has been really evident for us as an organisation is we've had a huge amount of empathy, because we're experiencing the exact same thing as our customers and partners and our prospects are. You know, we've been mobilizing a staff, you know, to work from home, ensuring that, you know, security, you know, they're all protected and that they have all the resources available to them. So we, that empathy, you know, we were really able to kind of feel that ourselves and kind of put ourselves in a position of how we could help from a security standpoint. We launched a working from home initiative kind of almost immediately in March. And we can, what that I suppose provided was a lot of advice on how companies can stay protected. We extended a 3-month free consumer license to each of the employees at our customers to just to make sure that they were secure from a personal device standpoint. And I think that was very well received, and they were kind of grateful of the support and protection. I suppose as well with face-to-face events, things moving digitally, we definitely saw a battle of webinar registrations and attendees, not just within our own organization, but with vendors. So our customers and prospects were bamboozled with webinar invites. So coming up with an engaging and compelling story was definitely felt probably in kind of April timeframe. So when I look at the webinars that we have done since then and what's been successful, there've been topics that have kind of resonated. So how has COVID-19 changed the threat landscape? And what can people learn from that? We also changed up the format of our webinars to kind of how it's done today here with a kind of panel of experts. So people are providing advice, and that has gone down very well. And again, making them interactive, poll questions and opening them up to the audience, but also a real personalized follow-up afterwards. And that's definitely helped. One of the things that has really helped me as a marketer is really staying close to my sales team, which is difficult when you're working from home and you're isolated from them and not in the office. But it's just really helped me understand, you know, what are their pain points? And one thing that we really discovered was that the number of buyers in the decision-making process increased. So budgets are obviously under, you know, stricter protocols, but a lot of the people that were involved now weren't from a technical background. So the conversations were really having to go back to basics. So to kind of get ahead of that for the remainder of Q2, we opened up kind of a business value messaging to some of our prospects. So compelling messages around, you know, what's the value of our solutions from a business perspective. And that worked really, really well. Another thing, I suppose, as well as a marketer who's responsible for demand gen, lead follow-up and the kind of conversion of lead to opportunity is kind of top of my priority list. So we had to change all our cadences because people just weren't available at the end of a phone anymore. It is difficult to get people in that way, but under COVID-19, that was next to impossible. So really being very prescriptive with our email content, extending those email cadences, you know, that was a key for us. And luckily, our conversion rate hasn't suffered too much. So those are some of the lessons that I have learned as a marketer. And as I continue to plan for Q3, everything is kind of going digitally. But hopefully we'll start, you know, as people return to work, some of the, you know, the more personalized things that we'll be able to do, such as, you know, direct mail will kick in.
Adele, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for giving us that summary of the last 3 months of unprecedented, I suppose I can say, experience. And if anyone on the call has got questions for Adele, start your question with Adele, and we'll put those questions, as many of them as we can, to Adele after we've heard from all of our speakers. Hashtag B2B lockdown if you want to tweet along to this. Time now to get your views, though, as following the best practice that we've just heard McAfee outline. It's our first poll. Our first poll is one that can be accessed by anyone who's taking part in this webinar live on a computer. And the question that we're asking is, over what time horizon are you planning your business marketing at present? Over what time horizon are you planning your business marketing at present? There'll be a number of options. Hopefully that poll will come up on the screen any minute now. We're asking whether you're looking over this week, over this quarter, this calendar year, this financial year, or whether indeed planning is a bit of a challenge at the moment. So I'm hoping that poll will come up, because if it doesn't, we'll have to just go on to our next speaker. Doesn't look like it's working. So, oh, here it is, just in the last minute. So over what time horizon are you planning your business marketing at present? And we'll give you a moment or two to vote. Once you've voted, please do put a question in the questions box for Adele. Tweet along at hashtag B2B lockdown, and we'll give you a moment more to complete this. So there you have it, 45%, almost half of you are saying that the time horizon that you're really focusing on is this particular quarter, 31% looking slightly wider out to this calendar year. And 10% of you are saying it's this financial year. Luckily, I think trailing at the back, planning is a bit of a luxury right now, say 7% of people. And it's also 7% of people who are looking at this week and this week alone. Thank you for that. I'm hoping that's going to be of interest to our next speaker. What are the chances he's a head of planning? Charlie Nicholson, head of planning at award-winning agency Really B2B. Thanks for joining us, and over to you.
Thanks a lot, Dave. And hi, everyone. And thanks for inviting me along today. So I thought I'd start with just a little bit about me. So I'm Charlie, as Dave says. I'm head of planning at Really B2B. We're a B2B marketing agency, helping our clients establish their strategies, generate demand, and of course, leads for their products. So my team and I are in charge of working with any prospect we have to establish what the best approach is for them to achieve their objectives. And then we keep working with our clients to review these strategies as things change. So as I'm sure you can imagine, we've been rather busy for the last few months as quite a lot has changed. The benefit of that, of course, is where we have clients across most industries, we actually have quite a wide view of the impact overall. And going further, being part of the Exium Group furthers this in that we have access to our sister companies like eConsultancy, Marketing Week, Oystercatcher's Insights. So I don't know if any of you have seen the eConsultancy's lowdown reports, but they're based on a series of dips with marketing professionals and really give a lay of the land. Basically, given all that, I thought it would be useful if I use my 5 minutes to share a couple of quite top line tips on how we're approaching marketing strategies at the moment. So the first one, in line with the poll that you've just done, is review your strategy now. I think that this was more the case a few weeks ago, to be honest. There was definitely a longer period than there should have been of denial, with executives holding onto their old strategies in the hope that they will make sense again post-lockdown. And actually, as we approach the end of lockdown, on face value, that may even look like they can revert all behaviors. And I know it will tempt many people just to flip back to where it was. But our stance on this is clear. Whilst there's much uncertainty, there are some significant shifts both economically and in working behaviours, and therefore prospects' challenges and needs will have changed. Moreover, it's worth considering what we call the visibility barrier. So I don't know if you've heard the term, but the idea is a bit like a family tree. Your business is at the bottom and your direct customers and suppliers at the level above, with their customers and suppliers at the level above that, and so on and so on. It's likely that the impact of your business is relatively clear, and you may well even understand the impact on your customers and suppliers, but it's the next level where we lose sight. And as the net gets wider and wider, so too increases the likelihood of impact. And any impact felt there will trickle all the way back down to you. So to be clear, we're not saying your strategy needs changing, it's more you need to review it critically and understand all those knock-on effects. The second point I wanted to make is don't sit and speculate, act and plan to adapt. So what I mean by that, well, there are so many factors at play at the moment that can significantly shift the course of the future, whether there's a second wave, how deep the recession is going to be. It basically means that the new normal is incredibly unclear and is going to remain so for the foreseeable future. It's going to be really easy at times like this to get lost scenario planning and forget to act. It's been said about coronavirus that the only certainty is uncertainty. So our tip is actually embrace this uncertainty by acting and planning to adapt as new information presents itself. So how do you do this? Well, we've broken this into two tactics. Firstly, embrace agility. And secondly, design for flex. So in terms of embracing agility, we mean create a rapid culture of reviewing and iterating strategies. Create the processes required to gather data and insight quickly and regularly to assess your strategies. And importantly, welcome change. Don't shy away from the red flags someone has uncovered, but create a war room culture celebrating those red flags and jumping on the solutions quickly. Secondly, is design for flex. So this is all about, it's good having rapid and up-to-date insight, but if you can't adapt your actual marketing activities, then it's pointless. So our tips to remain flexible are creating dynamic content that can have copy and images rapidly changed as and when your targets do, review internal processes to remove any lost time between creative marketing and sales teams, and invoke a just-in-time project management approach, which means pushing final sign-off decisions as late as reasonably possible to reduce the time between the point of no return and the delivery of the campaign. Our third tip is to be aware of the human impact. Now, I'm sure a lot of you have seen, but the OECD are currently forecasting that redundancy spike will dwarf 2008. And in a double dip scenario, it will go even further to the high level scenes in the 80s. Now, obviously the ramifications of that are enormous, but there are two parts that I think we should consider immediately. Firstly, it's brutal, but you need to expand your network. The contacts you've been nurturing for ages may simply not be in role soon. So you want to increase your contact base as wide as you can in those prospect companies. Secondly, be aware that you might not know what someone's going through and adjust your tone and patience accordingly. So like I say, whistle stop tour. In summary, review your strategy, embed flexibility in your plans, and be aware and considerate of the changing workforce. Feel free to message me on any specifics about this, but Dave, how was that? Was that under five?
That was great. That was brilliant. A very eloquently raced through those steps for us, Charlie. Thank you very much for that. People must have questions for you though on them. So if you do, put Charlie's name first in the question box and we'll get as many of those points to Charlie as we can after we've heard from all of our speakers. Also, thanks to those people who've asked some questions for Dell already. We'd love some more. Please do ping those through. And don't forget, we're also on social media, hashtag B2B lockdown. Time now for our second poll, which I'm really hoping appears on the screen quicker than our first one did. This one is staying with the theme of planning, and it asks, which groups are you involving in business marketing planning at present? And here we want you to click all of the responses that apply. Thanks for putting it up. So which groups are you involving in business marketing planning at present? My business is board, C-suite, team, suppliers, or customers. And click as many of those as you want. When you voted, do ping through a question for Adele or for Charlie. We'd love to have those. Or do tweet along a hashtag B2B lockdown, and we'll give people 30 seconds to vote in this poll. Okay, let's cut the poll there and see what the results are. So encouragingly, 81% of you are working with your marketing team, you're involving your marketing team in the business marketing planning that you're doing. The next highest result, I think also very encouragingly, involving the business C-suite, 67% of you are doing that. And 38% of you, which is a pretty impressive figure given these strange times, are involving your customers in the business marketing planning that you do. 33% of you voted to say that you were involving your suppliers, and 33% your business's board. I'm hoping that might be an interesting result when it comes to our third speaker. And very, and my apologies that you can't see her, but you can see me. I assure you, she's there in the ether, and she is Teresa Allen, who is the founder of B2B Strategic Consultancy for Clients and Agencies, the Magnus Club. Teresa, welcome to the webinar, and over to you.
Thanks, Dave. And yeah, apologies, you can't see me. I was saying I've even put on lipstick for the first time in 15 weeks. It feels very wasted, but never mind. We'll carry on. So what I thought I'd spend my 5 minutes talking about today is my experience of working with a client where I pretty much act as their in-house marketing strategy and looking at specifically messaging. They're a global $2 billion consultancy business. And we have had an amazing kind of last 8, 10 weeks of swapping things up and changing things around, and wanted to share them with you. So first of all, I kind of thought, let's take a step back and just actually, what is it that we're trying to do as marketeers? And really it's about, you know, the importance of connecting with our audience in a way that's going to make them sit up and listen. And to do this, we have to say something relevant to them at a time where they're going to listen. So it's going to be interesting to them at that moment. So obviously with COVID, and I think also we've been working quite a lot on the kind of Black Lives Matter movement as well, and that's had a big impact in messaging. We were really forced to stop what we were doing and reassess what our marketing messages were, because the chances are for you, as they were for us, they weren't relevant anymore. And that was really kind of, I boiled it down to two big things have changed for our audience. And as our audience, you'll recognize yourself in this, because it's kind of changed for everybody, right? It's their needs have changed and their mindset has changed. So I wanted to break that down a little bit further. So we start with needs. You know, ultimately, when we're looking at businesses, and I think we've already kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, that businesses are cutting spending to business critical expenditure only. So what does that mean for us? You know, as we're trying to actually push them down the pipeline and generate some sales. Ultimately, what we need to do is rip up the personas that we've spent ages developing, you know, for the last few years, because they're completely out the window. We now need to understand the challenges of our audience today. What does business critical mean to them? You know, and ask them, pick up the phone, do desk research. There's loads of stuff out there of what industries are on their knees and which ones are kind of been able to pivot. Loads of social and data analytics can help us understand our audience better, because that's the place we need to start based on the internet messaging. And then one of the things Adele said I thought was really interesting, that the buying decision-making unit is growing. And I think that's a really key point of, you know, business critical, there's a little bit of a tighter control over the money being spent. So we're having to talk to different people who wouldn't necessarily talk to. So think about terms of sale. Think about messages that are going to connect with them right now. You know, can you offer more for less? Can you spread the cost over a longer period of your cash flow? You know, these messages that you would never usually have done in the past might actually take a higher priority right now. You know, we usually put cost right up front on the whole. And also on the same lines, customer service. So, you know, how can you help your customers meet their needs and meet their challenges? Can your customer service be of value to them right now? And if so, say so. So think about changing up the messages that you would have usually had in priority order. One of the things Charlie said, you know, in terms of thinking in stages, and I think he's right, we kind of, things are changing, but I feel like we're at the end of the kind of first stage of business critical. You know, we're starting to open up. We've kind of moved from that paralysis of what are we all doing? You know, everybody just stopped for that minute. And what we need to start doing now is start thinking about how customers' needs will evolve. So actually, what is it that you're selling to them now? Is it going to meet their future needs? You know, for example, I think somebody's already talked about kind of long-term plans for remote working. If you're selling something in tech that goes this, then, you know, how does that impact tech requirements for security, for example, for Adele? So think about how you can pivot those messages. And you know, as needs change, opportunity opens. So use this time. I know Charlie said don't spend too long scenario planning, and I think he's right. But scenario planning from the point of view of your customer, getting their shoes, where are they going to get next? What messages are going to be good? Give yourself enough time, because as I've well learned in the last 10 weeks, it's been a roller coaster nightmare of swapping and changing things out. And so my last point on needs is, you know, that need to be agile. Just because you've worked for 6 months on developing the perfect new value proposition or brand message, you know, it now might not be the time to push it forward. And indeed, we've cancelled stuff that I've been working on for the last year and said, it's just not right. You know, it's too punchy. It's too about being your best self when right now people are really just struggling to be anything at all. So be agile, be flexible, be ready to change your messages up quickly and test, you know, test on paid and social. And I think the other thing that I'm finding is people are becoming quite deaf to the COVID message pretty quickly. One of the things that we found, you know, and this was going back kind of probably about six weeks ago, social media around it of kind of, you know, talking around the new normal and crisis, they didn't get enough pickup as what we would have usually. And then secondly, I wanted to talk about changing mindset, which I think is a really interesting one, because we're all in the same place, right? So one of the things that I've been working on with one of my clients, Korn Ferry, who's an organization consultancy, is how the leaders need to meet the changes of their teams, you know, through these difficult times. And one of the things we've been building this campaign around is the emotion curve. So you might recognize it as the crisis, the grief, or the change curve. But basically, it recognizes that during periods of unforeseen change that we're going through right now, every single one of us on the planet, which is kind of, you know, pretty unique, we go through a range of emotions. So starting with disbelief, and you'll probably recognize yourself in one of these. So disbelief or anger, and then go to withdrawal, then acceptance, and then optimism. And for each one of these stages, people respond and behave differently, including your target audience. And that makes it incredibly hard to connect with them, because also not everybody's in the same place. And people can go backward on the curve as well as forward, depending on what's happening to them and in their business at that time. But what we can be, and a word we've already heard about today, is be empathetic. You know, be aware that others are worried. They're worried about their business. Specifically, you know, the people that you're targeting might even be worried about their job and the future. So change your message and your tone accordingly. So a couple of do's and don'ts I put together. Don't be overconfident. Don't be bullish. You know, the language and the tone is just not going to resonate right now. You're going to destroy your brand value. Categorically, don't overpromise something you cannot deliver. You know, there's so much ambiguity out there. We can only basically see as far as kind of, you know, the month in front of us. And in terms of planning, you know, obviously it's great to see that people are actually planning a quarter and kind of half year ahead. And one of the things we talked about previously was, you know, this year is a game of two halves. But when it comes to messaging and putting out there, just don't promise something that's not going to happen, because it's going to have much more of a negative impact on your brand. And I, you know, personally, I also think don't focus on negative too much. We're just a bit oversaturated of pandemic messages screaming at us. Actually, we just need a little bit of a break from it, of kind of moving it forward. So on that vein, kind of be supportive, you know, recognize challenges, even if you can't solve them. And that comes back to being honest and authentic. One of my clients, the CEO is sending out personal emails to basically a very senior database that he has. And he's sending these out on a Sunday, and they're very personal. They're not at all to do with business. They're very in the vein of storytelling. And he's not selling anything. You know, it's just he felt the need to reach out and connect with people to say, we're all going through the same thing. And I cannot tell you, I've seen the responses from some of the most senior people of some of the biggest companies in the world saying, I look forward to these every week because I feel like you understand what we're going through and you're going through it with us. So think about your message, and actually, you know, it's not all about selling. And then I think finally, it's like the importance of purpose, which is kind of linked to this. So even in B2B, you know, your brand, you will be remembered for how it's treated its staff, that, you know, supported the community and society on a whole during both COVID and the Black Lives Matter movement. So one of the things I saw that I thought was quite interesting was a survey of 250 B2B professionals. 86% of those brands have a defined purpose beyond profit, but only 24% of them have actually embedded them the purpose into their actual organization, so their operations, their culture, and their supply chain. So there's a real kind of rift between the stated and the active purpose, and then now is a real opportunity to reduce that gap, you know, by being authentic and saying, what can we do that's really good? What are our capabilities that can actually help others? And not necessarily just your direct customers, but the world around us, because smart generosity will be remembered, but it needs to be authentic, it needs to be unconditional, and it needs to be humble. And then finally, don't stop everything. So, you know, historical research says that companies that actually kind of increase their marketing expend through economic downturn earns more profits and succeeds as the economy improves, anything from 4.3% to a whopping 340%. And it's difficult when we're all literally can't see ahead of us, and budgets have been tightened, and, you know, marketing budgets are often the first to get cut. But I would say, you know, to you guys, try and stay positive, stay honest, stay humble, and stay on.
What a great way to end. Teresa, thank you very much for that. If you've got any comments and questions for Teresa, please do put them in the questions box now. We're also looking for more questions for Charlie and for Adele. So please do ping those through as you think of them. I'm going to go to our third and final poll now, which asks you to rate your organization's response to the coronavirus crisis to date on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being very good and 1 being very poor. And we'll give you a moment or two to vote on that. If you voted, please do ping your questions through to Adele, to Charlie, and to Teresa, or do please use the hashtag B2BLockdown on Twitter, and we'll give you a moment or two to finish voting. Let's give it another 10 seconds, and then we'll take a view of where everyone's perspective sits. Okay, so there, 44% of you give your organization 5 out of 5 in terms of response. And 38%, 4 out of 5. So some pretty good numbers there in terms of your view of how your different businesses have responded. Just for the record, 13% of you scored 3 out of 5, and 6% of you scored 1 out of 5. Thank you for that. That gives us a sense of a general positivity, I think, as we go to our fourth speaker. Antonia Wade is the Chief Marketing Officer at Capita. Capita is a £4 billion consulting, digital services and software business employing over 60,000 people. And the company offers customer management, people and technology solutions to clients across government and across private sector. In her role, Antonia leads the transformation of Capita's marketing function and is responsible for driving a £10 billion pipeline, launching a new brand platform, and delivering a new operating model. And I'm delighted, therefore, given all of those things on her to-do list, that she's found the time to speak to us today. Antonia, thanks for coming on the webinar, and over to you.
Thanks, Dave, and thank you for the introduction. Wow, I barely recognised myself in that. And thanks also to my fellow panellists. I think that we've been some really fascinating points that have been brought up. And you know, just reflecting back on that poll, I think that I would absolutely rate my team's performance as a 5 in terms of their responsiveness to COVID. But I guess on a sobering note, we haven't had our first COVID quarterly results yet, any company. And so I think the reality is that none of us know yet, or will know for some time, how effective our marketing was in terms of sustaining our business momentum in the longer term. I mean, but just to reflect on that, so we, like everybody else, went from being in the office and in very short order being at home. And as I said to my team, we're not working from home or homeschooling, we're kind of locked down.
Antonia, we've lost you there. I'm not sure whether you can hear us. No. Let's go to some of the questions, and we'll try and get hold of Antonia and see if we can get her back. So apologies for that lapse in the line there. I'm going to go to Adele first of all then with a question that has come to us from Mark Pins. Adele, Mark asks, why do you think that there are more people involved in the cybersecurity decision-making process? Why do you think there are more people involved in the cybersecurity decision-making process?
I think budgets have definitely been under scrutiny. I suppose the cybersecurity is a big investment for organizations. And during COVID, companies across the world have definitely been looking to tighten up. What we have seen is that, these new decision makers that are coming in are just kind of questioning why additional services are required without really knowing kind of the technical functionality behind the software. So I think it's really budget driven, to be honest. I'm not sure whether we'll revert back or whether we'll see this extend going forward in the future, but hopefully not. Hopefully we can convey some of that kind of business value messaging and help them kind of really understand, kind of as Charlie and Teresa pointed out, to the benefits really is not only to our customers but to their customers and what that'll bring. Yeah.
Thank you for that. Charlie, a question for you from Lizzie Sparrow. And Lizzie asks, can you give us some examples of dynamic content?
So in terms of dynamic content, it's really about the systems that you have. So, I mean, you can get some great tech systems that mean that you can actually drop the content in really quickly and change it as it's going. And there are lots of tech platforms that can help you with that. But it's equally about your process. So another way of doing it is simply actually, like I say, pushing the decision points right to the end and then literally manually changing it if need be. So without wanting to give you a rundown of all the different MarTech options out there that can help you do this, I think that there are actually very feasible manual solutions as well. And it's just thinking about what you're trying to achieve with it.
Thank you for that. Teresa, a question for you from Nick Eads, who congratulates you on the idea of ripping up personas, but then goes on to ask, would you suggest a new methodology to stratify based on a target prospect's customer's level of financial distress or strength instead? So would you suggest a new methodology to stratify based on a target prospect's customer level of financial distress or strength instead of going down the personas route?
Wow, there's a question, huh? Potentially. I mean, I think it comes back to that first point of you really understanding and getting into the needs and the mindset of your customer. And if that comes down to kind of, financial strength and their ability to buy and potentially segmenting that way, then yes, why not? But, I think it's one of many things you could do, right?
Okay, cool. So thank you for that. I'm not sure whether we've got Antonia back on the line yet. Antonia, are you there? It's not sounding positive. So I'm going to go back to some more questions then. A question for Adele from Karen Birch. And Adele, Karen asks that you mentioned that the number of people involved in the buying process increased with more non-technical involvement. Karen asks, could you talk a little bit more about how you changed your approach in order to deal with that?
Sure. So when the I suppose the conversation came up with the sales team, it was really to uncover what's the pain point, how can we kind of help with opportunities in the quarter, anything that we could do. And one of the reps said that, you know, I'm getting a lot of, you know, these conversations now are going back to basics. It's not testing the software. The practitioner seems to be, you know, really happy. They've done the POCs. The pricing seems okay, but now we're getting asked, you know, we have an endpoint security solution. Why do we need EDR? And it's a really fundamental kind of technology understanding of how these solutions work in parallel with each other. So I identified a number of kind of new decision makers that we had that are in our database. We were talking to our practitioners, but perhaps not, you know, the procurement guy, the C-level, the CIO level in those same terms. So we created some very specific messaging about how EDR helps organizations become more efficient, and talking a lot about, you know, enabling the security teams to act quicker for threats. So really kind of not talking in kind of technical terms about how the product worked, but more kind of what the business value was. And there was definite huge engagement for those comms, and they definitely really resonated with them. We could see that from open rates and click-through rates. So it's definitely something now that we're continuing to do going forward, extending out that audience base and making sure that the messages are running in parallel. So where we're talking to the practitioners about a solution, whether that's about cloud security or endpoint security, that we're also speaking at the other level to the decision makers involved from a kind of a business value perspective.
Cool, thank you for that. A question for Charlie from Simon Ledbetter. Simon asks, many CXOs struggle with facts that disagree with their worldview or biases, and more data doesn't always help. How do you handle this resistance to truth? How do you handle the Donald Trumps of the marketing world?
I think to be fair, like, this whole period has actually made that kind of thing a little bit easier, in that people are more open to suggestions on strategic shifts than they might have been before. It's something that we always find, the need to influence and actually make sure you're talking to the people at the right level, you know, the classic marketing, sales, combo and ABM and everything like that. It is a challenge. Obviously, I would say putting data in front of them is one of the ways to help it, but you've completely undone that before in your question. I think it's about thinking about why they're saying that and actually understanding where that's coming from. And so then you can talk to that and see whether it's an objective set thing and then whether it's actually who you need to be talking to in order to influence that change.
Cool. Thank you for that. And good luck with that one, Simon. A question for Teresa. You talked, Teresa, about the need for research in order to be able to understand your audience better. Question is, in these kind of difficult times, how can you put in place that sort of research speedily?
Yeah, I mean, I don't actually think, you know, you necessarily need to do a huge research project. You know, it doesn't have to be through a research agency. I think you can do research, as I said, by, you know, just picking up the phone and speaking to some of your close customers that you actually have a relationship with and really understand their pain points. There's a whole load of desk research that you can do as well in terms of really understanding, you know, your specific industry that you're in and what's going on. So it doesn't have to be a big paid for research project. I think there are other ways that you can go about doing it, and using social as a platform as well as kind of putting questions out there and seeing what responses you're getting is a really quick way of actually kind of getting a test of the times. So yeah, I mean, there are obviously in many ways that you can work with some really good research agencies to you know, get some quick questions out there, but I don't think you necessarily need to do that. I think it's about pulling on the relationships that you have and actually kind of having those real honest conversations with them and really understanding them as a personal level as well as on a business level.
Thank you for that. I'm just going to check out the questions for a moment and just ask whether Antonia is on the line.
I am.
Now. Yay, we've got you back.
Yay. So it all goes well in rehearsal, doesn't it? And then when it comes to the actual performance.
So I think it's kind of almost from the top then, Antonia.
Fair enough. So we were talking about, I think, people rating themselves as a five in terms of response to COVID. And I think, you know, we came out pretty quickly with a business unusual campaign. But we, after a few weeks, we looked to review that and to say, well, you know, does that really fit what we feel like our clients are asking us for now? And that really comes to my first point. So I was sort of trying to think about this in terms of what did we learn and what would we take forward as we sort of think about our planning going forward. And the first thing was we really went back to our core brand principles to help us to shape what our campaign should be. I think it was quite easy to feel quite disoriented by the ambiguity and the pace that was surrounding us, you know, a few weeks ago. But by going back to the work that we've done on the brand last year, that really helped us to get a lot of clarity over why we would go to market with a certain position over another. And we landed on Building Tomorrow Together because we felt like that spoke to kind of the collaborative ethos that we had instilled in our kind of brand platform through last year. So I think going back and using your brand attributes as a means to review how you go to market can be very helpful and make sure that you don't really make a misstep when you're trying to deal with quite a lot of conflicting views in an ambiguous situation. And I think, you know, a point to note there is to make sure you're also really clear about your brand purpose, which is a really core part of who you are and how you operate, versus your proposition to the market, which you need to be much more flexible and responsive. And again, making sure that you maintain the clarity between what's your purpose versus what are your propositions, just to make sure that, again, you get the timing and the temperature of what you're saying into the market right. The second thing that we learned was that this, well, what has happened is this has really changed the sales and marketing relationship. So we operate in a fairly typical B2B environment where it's quite a sales-driven, sales-focused organization, and sales have quite strong views out of what marketing should look like, what good looks like. And this is a really good opportunity for us to reset a little bit because they were coming to us and saying, well, usually some of the channels that we would typically use to engage clients, we can't. So what can you do to help us in marketing? What are our points of view? What is the thought leadership? What are some of the channels that you can provide? And I think that that's really changed the dynamic somewhat of that relationship. And I think that that's a quite an interesting opportunity for marketing to think about how do you play a role kind of in supporting sales somewhat differently to before. And whilst I don't think that the face-to-face channels are going to go away, we will go back to that. I think that being vibrant and active on social, having points of view, harvesting great information for your clients is going to continue. And so it becomes an and rather than an or. And I think that that means that demands on marketing are going to go up in the short term, possibly as we're dealing with smaller budgets, as I think, you know, that we've sort of spoken a little bit to. So that was the second learning to think about, you know, how can you use this as an opportunity to reset that sales and marketing relationship a little bit. And I guess as a part of that, which sort of follows on from that, we use our digital channels really confidently and aggressively because we had, you know, we really wanted to get out into market. We'd invested a lot into capita.com last year. We were glad that we'd done it because we found a massive upsurge in people coming and looking for us through the website and through some of our digital channels. And what's been really great has been to be able to take insights from that and be able to play them back into the business and into sales. So who's coming on? What are they looking at? What topics are resonating? What are people, where, how are people charting their path through our digital landscape? What does that tell us about the client? Because I think one thing that will characterize this period for marketing and sales will be that we've had to listen to our clients differently, and we've had to engage with them at a problem and solution level versus a, we think you know your problem and here's some stuff that we'd like to sell you. So I think that shift and the insight that you can bring through using digital channels well, and again, that's something that I hope that we'll be able to maintain and continue to be valued by the organisation kind of as we move into whatever the next is. So thinking through how you use and think about your brand as a means of making sure that the tone and the quality of your comms are kind of true to who you are. That would be the first learning. Second learning is about the sales and marketing relationship and the shift in that, and what is the opportunity for that going forward. And actually, funnily enough, I was reading a piece of Forrester research saying that they say that in the next 3 years, the most high-performing B2B companies will get rid of all channel approaches to market, i.e. you won't have sales and marketing and digital anymore. It will be all one team really operating against a buyer journey, which I think will be a very exciting change for us in B2B marketing. And lastly, thinking about digital channels as a means of gathering insight and information, not just as a distribution mechanism. So those are just three of the things I think that we've learned and that, you know, trends that I hope will continue as we plan into kind of the next phase of our go-to-market through this year and into next.
Antonia, thank you so much for that. I'm so glad that we were able to get to hear from you. So thank you for being persistent with the phone line over the last sort of 10, 15 minutes or so. If people have got questions for Antonia, please do put them through now. And if there's time, we'll try and get to those. I'm going to do a kind of whistle stop tour through some other questions that we've got. Mark Saxby is asking Adele for a humble score. He emphasizes humble, a humble score out of 5 that you would give to McAfee's response to COVID-19. And what can smaller businesses learn from a large company like yours when it comes to being ready for the unexpected? If you can be reasonably succinct in that response, that would be great.
I'd say probably about a 3.5 or 4. I would say that's, as a company, that's kind of how we've handled it. I know we might have been a bit slower off the mark than maybe some more agile, smaller companies could have been. In terms of advice, I would just say, and I think it's kind of been collectively mentioned in from all the panelists, be empathetic, you know, be humble with your customers and their prospects in your communications and your approach, and you know look at the planning side and see whether that needs to change, you know, how you adapt to that, and yeah, I think that's probably
pretty succinct. Yeah. Thank you. A quick question for Charlie from Nick Eads. Nick says, recession, as you rightly raised it, is the next big issue. What tools do you plan to use on an ongoing basis to navigate this volatile landscape?
I think that when thinking about companies going into a recession, actually, you've got to think about what they're doing and how they're behaving in it. And they will be reviewing, obviously, their budgets and their strategies based on that. So it's about understanding what the right course is for them. And as was alluded to earlier, obviously, marketing budgets that are slashed in recessions are obviously often regrettably done so. When you actually analyze companies that do and don't slash marketing budgets, the ones that actually kept the brand marketing going is do outperform those that didn't do beforehand. In terms of tools, recession, I think, is much like what we're talking about. It's about insight, it's about understanding what's going on, and making sure you can be adaptive and react as quickly as possible, because the fluidity is going to be key.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Question for Antonia from Mark Pins. Mark says, do you anticipate reorganizing the Capita structure in line with the Forrester recommendations? I'll repeat that question. Do you anticipate reorganizing the Capita structure in line with the Forrester recommendations?
So Well, it's certainly something that I think we should consider. I don't think we've got as far as actually planning any kind of restructure or reorganisation. But certainly when I centralised the marketing function last year, and as part of doing that, in our go-to-market team, so our campaign team effectively, we, instead of aligning that to our business structure, we actually aligned it to client relationship. So we have a team that looks at retention, a team that looks at renewals, a team that looks at cross and upsell, a team that looks at account-based marketing, and actually we treat brand or kind of thought leadership as a campaign in that structure too. So that was us trying to get closer within marketing to really thinking about the buyer relationship and the buyer journey within how we operate as a team. So I think that, you know, we still see kind of what the results of that look like as we get through this year. And it's a very different model to certainly any that I've worked in before. But already it's enabling us to really look at things like the cost of acquisition per customer, lifetime value, and really think about how much money are we putting behind retention versus renewal versus new business, which is quite exciting. We have also brought digital into marketing as well. And in my last role, we brought inside sales in, which was something that we're kind of looking at the moment in Capita. So that's that kind of first sales approach. But if you think about it, I mean, you know, whether we get to a reorg, I don't think, you know, we're not there yet. But if you think about it just as a kind of intellectual exercise, it becomes quite exciting to think that you would have teams of people who are really focused on that full buyer journey. And whether you have to do that structurally or whether you can solve that in other ways, I don't know. But certainly, as we're thinking through how we allocate funds, how we report on marketing success, how we organise ourselves as a marketing team, and how we prioritise the work that we're doing, we are aligning it to the buyer journey. So I think hopefully will be a good test point to see how that works.
Thank you for that. Another question for you, Antonia. This one comes from Carla Rivershaw. And Carla asks, how has Capita been personalising experiences for their customers and prospects during the COVID crisis? How has Capita been personalising experiences for their customers or prospects during the crisis?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's been interesting, hasn't it? And I'm sure that you guys, like I did at the very beginning of COVID, you know, you sort of get marketing emails that was sort of as if COVID wasn't even happening. It's like, come to your local store and get discounted trainers. It's like, oh, I can't leave the house. What? It's the last thing on my mind. So, you know, I think, you know, there was definitely a wave of that at the very beginning. Really, the way that we managed it has been through using our internal team, by which I mean our sales and our delivery teams. So what we've been doing is producing what we think is really good, high-value thought leadership, really quality content, and using sales as a distribution channel, because they're much closer to understanding where the client is in terms of their immediate problems, how they're feeling about things. And also within clients, what we saw as well was there was small teams set up to look at, you know, post-COVID, and then there were teams looking at operational challenges within COVID. So we were really using our sales teams and that relationship as a barometer to help us to filter through the information in an appropriate way, simply because we don't have the data and we haven't switched on our tech stack for long enough for us to be able to have automated that. But I actually think even if we could have done, we probably wouldn't have done. We would have still used that human-to-human filter in that final mile. So whilst we were producing really good content, making sure that there was, yeah, a human-to-human touch point before distribution. Different, I think, if people are coming to you and coming into your digital environment, but certainly where you're pushing out, I think you have to operate with pretty extreme care, and that needs to be done with the people who are closest to the client.
Cool. Thank you for that. We're out of time. I've had one other member of the community come on and tell me of their need to hire a marketing manager. So there was a full-time London-based marketing manager role, seeking 5 years experience, brand focus. If that is of interest to you, ping me after this and I'll put you in touch with the person in our community who is doing the search. That's it. Thanks to our four brilliant speakers, to Adele Walsh, to Charlie Nicholson, to Teresa Allen, and to Antonia Wade. And thanks to our brilliant backroom team of Louise Neal, Claire Sheriff, Josh Bench and Jay Neal. And thanks to you for participating. Next Wednesday at 16:30 BST, we're back with Blick Rothenberg, Sarah Donnelly, Media Effects, Marco Perotti, Emmett and Churchman's Lorraine Emmett, and marketing consultant Simon Ledbetter. You can listen again to this webinar from tomorrow, and you can also listen to our weekly podcast. This week, it's all about good client agency relationships. On Monday at 12:30 BST, there's a free webinar of bite-sized B2B marketing training with Make Digital Works, Helen Tanetti. And on the 8th of July at 16:30 BST, there's our legendary Business Marketing Big Community Hall with lots of networking among B2Bers, an interview with a top B2Ber, a discussion on growth marketing, and some meditation for stressed marketers. Then there's also our mentoring service where we pair B2B marketing people wanting to be mentored with B2B marketing professionals who can help. And you can read the white paper by Emeritus Professor of Cranfield University School of Management, Malcolm McDonald, on how to develop financially quantified value propositions that capture the attention of their customers. You can sign up to become a member of the Business Marketing Club for a ridiculously small annual fee as well. Details of all of that at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And do contact me if you want to with any feedback or if I can help you at davestevensnow@gmail.com. From everyone here, thank you so much for dialing in today. I hope you have a great day. All the best. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.